everyone, and welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I'm the host of Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues and the nonprofits and community leaders that are working to address them. And hopefully you'll learn how you can make a difference with your deeds. Today I wanted to take some time to talk about Virginia's recently enacted laws that limit women's reproductive rights. The General Assembly kicked off its 2013 session last week, and there are, again, more efforts to further chip away at choice and negatively impact Virginia women's access to affordable, comprehensive health care. But on the flip side, the extreme nature of last year's legislation helped to galvanize and organize pro-choice voices, and forces are aligning to ensure women in Virginia regain access to full reproductive rights. I'm so thrilled to have two experts in the field joining me today. Kathy Grenier is director of the Patricia M. Arnold Women's Rights Project at the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you so much.
And then joining us on the phone is Tarina Keene. Tarina is the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia, and she's also the founder and chair of the Virginia Coalition to Protect Women's Health. Tarina, are you there? Do we have Tarina on the line? Well, we'll hear from Tarina soon, I'm sure. Technical challenges sometimes occur here down at the station, but I'm sure she'll be with us in just a minute. You know, I think many of our listeners will remember the attention, or really the notoriety, that Virginia got last year because of primarily the transvaginal ultrasound bill that went through. Right, Kathy? We were involved with ACLU at that time.
Correct, yes. And I think that we can say, when you make it onto the Daily Show as well as Saturday Night Live as a laughing stock, then you certainly gained some notoriety. And yeah, that is not the attention that we want to see paid to Virginia for those reasons this session.
Yeah. So unfortunately, there was a version of that ultrasound bill that was signed into law, right? Can you remind us what that was?
Yes, definitely. So the fight against the first version of the ultrasound bill is what garnered the most attention. And that bill was so egregious for quite a few reasons. And most of the public attention focused on the fact that the bill required a transvaginal ultrasound, given the fact that when a woman is early on in her pregnancy seeking a abortion in the first trimester, that is the method by which you're able to actually see the fetus. And so after the outcry over that, the bill eventually was amended. And in some ways, that is a show of the success of activism and folks speaking out against that bill in record numbers. In other ways, though, it also displayed an additional challenge to us, I think, because when the bill was changed, it didn't actually make it necessarily better. So
it's now a mandatory requirement for an abdominal ultrasound ahead of any first trimester abortion, correct?
Exactly. In addition to the fact that throughout the entire path of this legislation, the ultrasound must take place 24 hours in advance of the termination. And that kind of waiting period is a huge barrier
for women. So think about taking off more time from work, transportation issues, the list goes on. So it's obviously an access issue. And the fact that abdominal ultrasound doesn't even work, right, really points to the fact that this isn't about the medical benefits to the mother or the child.
It's exactly clear that this is not about women's health and safety, yeah, whatsoever. This is about the ultrasound bill in particular is about shaming women for the choice that they're making and attempting to change their minds, which is really insulting, as if women don't think about this decision with their family, whoever their faith leaders might be. It's something that clearly women are capable of. Exactly, their position. Clearly, women are capable for deciding themselves with their doctor. And these are obviously about limiting choice and access.
So, unfortunately, that is in effect at this time. This is a current barrier to women's access to reproductive health, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Now, I hear that Tarina is now successfully on the line. Tarina, are you with us now?
I am.
Great.
Thanks
for your
me.
Patience. Yeah, so great to have you. Thanks for your patience in getting you connected through the air. Just a reminder, Tarina Keene is the Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia. And Tarina, you are also the founder and chair of the Virginia Coalition to Protect Women's Health, right?
Yes, I am.
And so that was an effort to address some of the TRAP regulations, is that correct? The targeted regulation of abortion providers?
Absolutely. We came together. There are several organizations and healthcare providers that came together with the sole purpose of mitigating the TRAP regulations, and that's what we've been doing since basically the governor signed the bill into law in March of 2011.
So why don't you remind us a little bit about what those regulations do to clinics and providers?
Absolutely. So what happened in 2011 is this bill was, there was an amendment that was stuck onto a nursing home bill, which was Senate Bill 924. And what it did is it directed the Board of Health to begin drafting regulations that actually made first trimester abortion providers in Virginia to come into basically treat them as if they were hospitals. And so we've been dealing with this for the last couple of years, and right now it first started off as an emergency regulatory process. So these were fast-tracked for no you know, relevant reason other than they were trying to push them through as quickly as possible. So they did push the emergency regulations through in less than 6 months. And now we're going through the permanent regulatory process. So it's quite an onerous process. And every day we ask questions about how this all works. And I think that that's probably part of the strategy in trying to confuse not only advocates and activists, but also the people who have to, have to actually implement these regulations, which are our healthcare professionals. But what the true purpose of these regulations is to basically shut down our first trimester abortion providers in Virginia. We have 20 providers across the state that are working diligently to meet these regulations, but in the end, they could prove too costly and too onerous and burdensome to actually be able to keep all of these providers operating. The worst of the regulations are the requirements to actually retrofit existing healthcare providers, some of them that have been operating since Roe 40 years ago, and basically turn them into hospitals overnight. And
which
this really
would
has
be
nothing
very,
to
very costly.
It would, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Virginia Department of Health is actually estimated for some of these providers that it will cost millions of dollars. And we still anticipate that we have only one provider that probably will be able to meet the requirements, but they're
the
a brand new facility.
One facility for the whole Commonwealth. That's what we're looking at.
Yes,
so that all of the women in Virginia would have potentially one access point.
Absolutely, yes. So, well, that won't have to actually make any real significant changes, but we're talking about the majority of these 20 will have to make they'll have to upgrade or retrofit their existing buildings. Some of them, some of these are relatively new buildings too, but they'll still have to make either hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of renovations up to millions of dollars. And we're just hoping that the majority of our facilities will be able to meet these requirements if these regulations stand.
If they stand. So what are the opportunities for rolling them back?
Well, we're still hanging in there and not giving up hope of trying to continue to work with the Department of Health and the Board of Health to not impose these particular onerous construction requirements on the healthcare providers. We have, as of January 28th, at least that's what's currently coming down from VDH, is we'll have a 60-day public comment period that will kick off. So we are encouraging people all over the state of Virginia to chime in and to talk about how onerous these are and what this will really mean for women's health. If we have the majority of these providers shut down, this could really put women's health in jeopardy. And remember, some of these facilities provide much more than abortion care. They provide affordable, across-the-board reproductive health care, especially for women who, rural women, low-income women, women who have limited health insurance or no health insurance at all. So these are women we're really, really concerned about. But this is about access, and this is about safe legal access to first trimester abortion care.
So where can people, if you are encouraging people to share their voice and opinions on this, where can they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.coalitionforwomenshealth.org, and sign up. The last I checked, we were well over 1,300 people that had actually committed to making public comment. And we're hoping, I would love to see that number double by the time that this all transpires, because the Board of Health really needs to hear from Virginians about, they know how politicized this process has become. Back in September, back in June, the Board of Health actually decided to grandfather in existing health care providers of first trimester abortion into this process and said, okay, you have to meet all these requirements, but we're going to grandfather you in. You still have to meet, they still have to meet a lot of requirements with their buildings as well. Mm-hmm. But they would not have to basically transform themselves overnight into hospitals. And that's only fair because that's how generally regulations work. Mm-hmm. We know that this process. Usually, when you have regulations, they're not retroactive.
Right, and it can take some time,
especially mm-hmm. when it comes to construction of facilities. But
the grandfathering didn't stick, right?
No, unfortunately, the Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli got involved and began putting a lot of pressure on the Board of Health. We think using a lot of legal fiction and bullying tactics to actually change their minds. And in September at the Board of Health meeting, he basically made them start from scratch on the regulations, and then they voted, unfortunately, to roll back that grandfather clause and apply across the board for these particular healthcare providers to meet 2010 construction standards for hospitals. And that's just utterly ridiculous.
So right now we're mm-hmm. looking at you all are seeking additional public comment on the issue.
Yes.
And where is it again that people can go share their thoughts and comments?
They can go to www.coalitionforwomenshealth.org.
Okay.
And sign up online. It's pretty much front and center on our front page of the coalition website.
Right.
And we will be reminding everybody who signs up, who pledges to make comments, We'll be reminding everyone once the date comes down from VDH, and when that opens up, and you can make comment online. And there will also probably, we are expecting, we don't know how many just yet or where, but there will probably be opportunities for in-person comment during the emergency regulatory process, which was about this time last year. We had two opportunities to do that. One was actually held in Alexandria, and one was held in Richmond. So we're hoping, since this particular comment period is a little longer, that we'll have even more opportunity to do that in person. Right. And then you actually have longer opportunity to do that online. So
right.
that's even easier. But we need to hear from as many Virginians as possible.
The coalition will help stay on top of what all of those dates and opportunities are and then push it out to the list if you sign up, basically.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. Today we're talking about women's rights with Tarina Keene of Narrow Pro-Choice Virginia and Kathy Greenier of the ACLU of Virginia. And Kathy, I'd like to hear a little bit more from you as well. Can you talk a little bit about what your project, the Women's Project at ACLU, is focusing on looking ahead to this current General Assembly session? I know we have some things from the past that we need to address and get some public opinion and comment on, but looking ahead to what's before the General Assembly for consideration now, what are you working on?
Well, I wish that I had more positive news to share about what's up ahead for us, but unfortunately what we've seen is that the attacks on reproductive rights in Virginia have only grown more egregious with this session, and the bills that we have seen introduced this time around go beyond attacking women's decision-making about their reproductive health care. They go beyond attacking access to basic reproductive health care services like abortion, and are now attacking a fundamental service, access to contraception. And so we will be working on opposing a couple bills that are related to insurance coverage of contraception. If folks follow bill numbers, that's House Bill 1314, 1315, and 1417. The easiest way, though, to remember that is we have an ACLU Women's Rights and Reproductive Freedom page on richmondsunlight.com.
That's richmondsunlight.com?
Correct, mm-hmm. Yes. And you can follow along with us as we're tracking these bills and a few more. But the basic gist of what these bills do is they place limits on contraception coverage in a couple different ways. So two of the bills are a attack on the new federal rule that mandates contraception coverage for those participating in the new healthcare exchange. And these two bills, 1314 and 1315, they directly conflict with that new federal rule. And they are placing a limit on contraception coverage by either requiring the insurer in the exchange to bifurcate the plan and offer one plan with contraception coverage and one plan without. And then the other bill mandates that the insured person must ask for their contraception coverage. And this flies in the face of what was such an incredible victory about this new federal rule. The new federal rule gives seamless access to this basic fundamental service that women rely on in planning their lives, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so by undermining that, these bills are, they're basically seeking a license to discriminate against women. And what these bills are premised on is an argument about First Amendment religious freedom. And what we, I think, all need to keep in mind as activists and advocates and members of the public who are affected by these bills is that these bills are not at all about religious liberty. That's a smokescreen. And that's not at all what's happening here.
Yeah. Well, we've already had this discussion on the national level,
exactly.
On the federal level.
Exactly. And now this is just a repeat of it here in Virginia. We're seeing the same tactics. And what these bills are actually about is discriminating against women and limiting basic health care for women. Mm-hmm. And I do want to point out, too, that the two bills that are related to contraception coverage and health care exchanges, they are, because they're in direct conflict with the new federal rule, they violate the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. So basically what that means is that the new federal rule trumps any state law such as these bills. And so if they were to pass, the federal rule trumps. But these bills are still egregious for a couple of reasons that I think folks need to keep in mind, which is that the intent is egregious, and we shouldn't stand for attacks on something as basic as birth control. This is 2012, right?
13, actually.
2013, actually. Then also, if these bills were to pass and the federal rule is ever changed or set aside by the courts, or if a change in the presidential administration mm-hmm. makes the rule change, then Virginia has in place, lying in wait, these really damaging bills.
I see. So they could still be there, whether or not they can be going into effect at this time. They could still be in effect later.
Exactly, if there was ever a change to that federal
rule. I'm not a legal expert like you, so does it, having a bill like this, and if it were to pass and become law, are they trying to set up another Supreme Court argument, Supreme Court level argument, or would that even go that far?
Well, my perception is that they're banking on the litigation that's working its way through the courts right now, setting aside the existing federal rule, and then Virginia would be poised
to have it all in place, ready to go.
And I think again that just shows how the egregious nature of these bills, right? Mm-hmm. That to have the intent of setting the stage to mm-hmm. limit access to contraception mm-hmm. for Virginia women is really unthinkable.
So what was the other what was the other thing you said you were focused on that's related to women's rights?
Yeah, so there's actually a third bill related to contraception that is a little different than the other two I was just discussing, and that is House Bill 1417, which says that no health insurance plan offered by the Commonwealth to the state and local employees is required to include coverage for contraception.
Oh, so aren't they? They're pretty much the largest employer, definitely in Richmond, right?
Right.
Across the Commonwealth. I mean, definitely. Aren't they the biggest employer in Richmond?
I'm actually...
Well, one of the biggest. When you think of all the state offices and VCU and everybody else that comes into the state plan in Richmond, that's a lot of people.
Not sure if it's the biggest or not, but certainly, yes, a lot of people. Uh-huh. And so this would have... This is unrelated to the healthcare exchange. It's not something that we are looking at an analysis of whether federal law trumps or not, right?
But it's
this
just tacking on another limit on women's access to contraception.
They may not be participating in the exchange, and then this would be cut off for them if the insurance coverage is not required. And this, is, again, yet another attempt to give a license to discriminate against women. And again, the argument is being made that this is about religious liberty when it's not at all.
Right. The smokescreen, as you said. Now, Tarina, I know we are starting to run out of time. And Tarina, I know that you had mentioned the 40-year anniversary this year of Roe v. Wade. Next Tuesday, I believe you all are gathering together the Coalition and Other Voices for a rally. Is that right?
Yes. So it's funny because we are part of several different coalitions, it seems, around reproductive rights. Right. So the Virginia Pro-Choice Coalition, we are a group of women's organizations, and also don't just represent reproductive rights and justice, but we do come together on this particular issue and around legislation. And we are putting on what we're calling a celebration of 40 years of Roe. at the Capitol on next Tuesday, January 22nd. That marks the 40th anniversary of the landmark Supreme Court decision of Roe versus Wade. And we're hoping that as many people as possible will come out and join us at 10 o'clock. We're going to be at the Bell Tower, which is just slightly off to the right of the Capitol, down the hill from the General Assembly building. So right on the corner, I think it would be on the corner of 9th and mm-hmm. Grace Street. Mm-hmm. It's probably the best way of saying that. And we've gotten lots of great feedback of people who are coming out. We're hoping to have several hundred people. We'll welcome more.
Oh, certainly. So where can people go to get more details on that? Or do you have a place for people to register that are planning to come?
Yes, we do. If you go to NARAL Virginia is sponsoring the sign-up. Our registry for the rally. So if you go to www.NARALVA, and I'll spell NARAL just in case, it's NARALVA.org.
Right.
And we have, if you go to the events page, you'll see Rally for Choice. And we are having some great speakers. Just if I can run those off for you just really quickly, we have pro-choice champions such as Senator Ralph Northam and Senator Barbara Favola, who have been real champions against the ultrasound law. And we also have Dr. Karen Remley, who is the former Virginia Health Commissioner.
Who resigned over that issue, yeah.
She actually resigned over TRAP.
Right.
So I don't think that we've seen the last of Dr. Remley, and we're really excited to have her come out and be our keynote speaker at the rally.
It sounds like you have some great voices and a great rallying point for people that are interested in this issue. Unfortunately, we are already out of time. I really appreciate both of you taking the time out to join Inspire Indeed. Kathy Greenier is with ACLU of Virginia, and Tarina Keene, the Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia. Thank you again for being with me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And just a reminder of a place to track some of those bills is RichmondSunlight.com, where you can continue to track those bills and keep up on the events. So thanks again for your time on Inspire Indeed today, and hope you're inspired to make a difference with your deeds.